भगवते वासुदेवाय
The reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, chapter 17, text number 33.
Nahyasyasti priyah kaschin, na priyah svah paropiva. आत्मत्वात् सर्वभूतप्रियो हरिः
He holds no one as very dear and no one as inimical. He has no one for his own relative and no one is alien to him. He is actually the soul of all living entities. Thus, he is the auspicious friend of all living beings and is very near and dear to all of them. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead in his second future is the super soul of all living entities. As one's self is extremely dear, the super self of the self is still more dear. No one can be the enemy of the super self, of the friendly super self, who is equal to everyone. Relationships of dearness or enmity between the Supreme Lord and the living beings are due to the intervention of the illusory energy. Because the three modes of material nature intervene between the Lord and the living beings, these different relationships appear. Actually, the living entity in his pure condition is always very near and dear to the Lord, and the Lord is dear to him. There is no question of partiality or enmity. Om Agyan. We are reading from the chapter Mother Parvati curses Chitraketu, where these verses which are going on currently are the divine words spoken by Lord Shiva to Parvati, extolling the glories of the Lord's devotee Chitraketu. So he is glorifying the Lord and he is glorifying the devotee. He is glorifying their qualities. So I was very eager to hear the Bhagavatam from the lips of the great devotees of Chapati here. So I have been tricked into speaking Bhagavatam by Govind Prabhu. So hopefully the next few times I will get to hear from all of you when I come. Here there is a description about the super soul. Especially the last sentence of the purport says, there is no question of partiality or enmity. In fact, in spiritual life, if one wants to make advancement towards the supreme abode, spiritual abode of the Lord, then one should be heart of hearts convinced that Lord has no enmity for the living entities in general, and to begin with. And also the Lord doesn't have enmity even towards the so-called enemies who may consider themselves enemies to the Lord. One should be convinced of that also. If one is not convinced of this fact, one cannot faithfully execute devotional service. And also if one is suspicious about Lord's character, Lord's moral or so-called immoral behavior, then also one may not be able to execute devotional service with full confidence. That is why Srimad Bhagavatam brings out such amazing deep truths about the nature of Lord's personality in different sections, so that we may thoroughly understand to the best of our ability as living entities the nature of the Lord and be able to come forward to surrender to him without having any reservations. Like here it is said about the nature of the Lord. Lord being impartial and Lord not being an enemy to the conditioned souls or enemies. The Lord is so kind that although He may give sufferings in the path of the living entity, still the living entity can understand that the sufferings given by the Lord are also a form of mercy. When we take the ordinary souls, ordinary living beings who are not devotees or who are not spiritualists, the very first fundamental fact they do not know, I am not the body, I am the soul, even that they don't know. So when their material assets are destroyed, they feel as if they are destroyed. It causes so much frustration for them. What to speak of when their body is stripped away by the material nature? Because the material nature is highly unpredictable and it is uncontrollable also by us. And the happenings in material world are unpredictable and we cannot control them. So the ordinary living entities are always having a misunderstanding about the Supreme Lord. That is why they say, if there is a God, there should be no suffering in this world. Many people have this kind of notion. Because they, first of all, they do not know who they are in the very first place. First, one has to understand that truth. And after that, one can come to the point of understanding, not only I am indestructible, no damage to my material assets can damage me, or even damage to my body cannot damage me. I am aloof from the material body also. After one gains this confidence about one's own identity, then one can begin to truly think. Then when one begins thinking, then one can also understand that ultimately God, He is a protector, He is a well-wisher, He is a caretaker, He is a permitter. One can understand the nature of the Lord. In fact, a living being can come to the point of understanding that even if the Lord is withdrawing something, we say, yasyaham anugrihnami harishyet addanam shanai. Some people fear. Is it true that if I become Krishna conscious, then Lord will take away everything? Once some senior student had told some junior upcoming students that, you know, if you advance, you have to be prepared for such things. Lord will withdraw everything from your life. So be prepared. So they became afraid. They had a question whether to advance or not. Better remain where you are. Because if you advance, Lord will withdraw everything. And it took me quite a bit of time to convince them. I told them, you see, the fruit vendor is giving so many fruits to Krishna. She is emptying her in a basket. But what is Krishna doing? He is giving everything in return. Much more than what she gave him. In the form of jewelry and gold and silver and everything. See, Sudama is not even asking Krishna for anything. And Krishna is supplying so many facilities for him. When Sudama returned back, he found the palace and everything. So I asked him, is the one who gives to Krishna gains or does he loses? So then they were convinced somehow. But it is true that sometimes Lord takes away the assets of a devotee or comforts of a devotee. Exactly like a mother sometimes withdraws or withholds the toys from a child so that the child's future career or studies will not be spoiled. Otherwise the child is all the time playing with the toys for a better purpose. So a devotee should be convinced that the activities of the Lord in one's life are an orchestration of mercy. That kind of understanding has to be there. In fact, if you look at the creation around us, it is so easy to understand the Lord's deep sense of compassion towards us. For example, I was asking this question again to a group of students. Why the ocean water is salty? Is Lord less intelligent that has created such a vast quantity of water and all of it is salty like this? Now why can't He create the water which is completely pure and potable that all living entities can benefit from that directly? Of course, many reasons were given by different people, but they were not the ultimate reason. One reason any intelligent student can think of is that, you know, water cannot remain clean and pure unless there is a base, unless there is a salt to keep it pure. Or somebody else might think, you know, if all the water is in, you know, Indian Ocean or Arabian Ocean, then if somebody is in Kashmir, if they want water, they have to transport it through long pipes and everything, you know. So in order to give home delivery to every living entity, you know, Lord may arrange the rains, you know. So one may think like that. But there is a deeper purpose to why the Lord created the ocean water salty. And why did he arrange the rains? The rains are not available to the living entity unless they perform yajna. So the Lord has arranged the life of the living entities in such a way that their activities will also lead them to the ultimate abode, the spiritual abode. Because once we start the yajna, then immediately the cycle comes. Annad bhavanti bhutani parjanya atanna sambhava yajnat bhavati parjanyo yajna karma samudbhava evam pravartitam chakram na anuvartayati hayaha aghayu rindriya ramo mogam partha sajivati. Krishna says, if you become an indriya rama, you cannot be happy even in this world. So one has to become an atma rama. So the Lord has designed the world in such a way that the living entities are forced to submit to him, surrender to his laws ultimately, so that will pave way for them to return back to the spiritual abode safely. That kind of arrangement is made. So there is no arrangement made in this world that is done foolishly. Everything has a purpose. So in the same manner, we could also think of many different aspects of life. Even when we see the creation, the sufferings are actually kept so that the living being can learn valuable lessons. For example, if somebody sleeps for more than 10 hours, they will have experience, they will have a severe pain in the hip. Because the body gives a signal that you are not supposed to sleep so much, like a polar bear. No? Body gives the indication that enough now, get up now. Sometimes people think, what to do, I have nothing to do, better sleep. No, you cannot sleep. Because in human body, one is not supposed to sleep like that. So in this way, there are many signals kept by the Lord for the living being so that he can flow towards the right path. As soon as he goes towards the wrong path, immediately there is a kind of stoppage. He is not allowed. Anyone breaks any of the laws of God. That is why it is said, no one can break the laws of God. One can only break oneself against them. It's not possible to break the laws of God. We break ourselves against them. When we break, somebody may smoke, they only harm themselves. Somebody may drink, they may only harm themselves. Somebody may say, why the Lord is so cruel that he doesn't allow me to enjoy freely? Why? Why is he so cruel? Actually, Lord is not cruel. He ultimately... the examples come to my mind. Sometimes Prabhupada and his disciples in the early days, it goes to show how Prabhupada was so free and benevolent in his relationship with his disciples, that sometimes they dealt with Prabhupada just like a friend. Once there was a Mataji who was very unhappy and she was very upset, and Prabhupada could see that she is very angry and upset because of her lack of internal submission. And Prabhupada looked at her and said, you are not happy. And she in response said, no, I am not unhappy, I am all right. And Prabhupada again turned to her with even more greater determination. He told her, no, I am telling you, you are not happy. If you claim you are happy, that is another kind of happiness, dog's happiness or hog's happiness, illusory happiness. Prabhupada said, just look at that big dog, he said. Big dog, big barking, but as soon as the master pulls the leash, his independence is finished. Then he comes jumping to the master. In this way, all the living beings in this world are dancing according to the dictates of illusory energy. And they are thinking they are happy. They are not happy. So Prabhupada said, you are not happy. So she was so already hurt before that she retaliated back. She told Prabhupada, what about the devotees? They also have a big mouth. They speak big things. They sing big things. But when you call them, they come jumping to you. What about them? She asked. Prabhupada didn't become angry. See, Prabhupada was merciful. He was very compassionate. So he didn't have any vengeance for her. He was purifying her. He was trying to help her. So Prabhupada said, yes, yes. Devotees are also jumping. But that is different, he said. Just like if a surgeon is taking out a knife and tells you, lie on the table. You will suddenly lie on the table and expose your stomach to be operated or something. But if a thief or a rogue takes out a knife and says, lie on the table, will you lie down? He will cut your throat. So Prabhupada said, that is the difference between surrendering to Krishna and surrendering to Maya. Surrendering to a pure devotee and surrendering to Maya, Maya's dictation. So, in this way, Prabhupada showed her clearly that surrender we must, but the question is to whom? We have no choice. In fact, the living entity's nature is created in such a manner that if he somehow or other is ready not to surrender to Maya, by default he surrenders to Krishna. That is explained in the Bhagavad Gita 6th chapter also, in one of the purports to the verse, that verse, Jitatmana Prashantasya Paramatma Samahitaha. In that purport, Prabhupada writes, if the Maya, if the living entity can somehow withdraw itself from Maya's dictation, then Prabhupada says, automatically he surrenders to the Super Soul. He comes under the custody of Super Soul. That kind of arrangement is made by the Lord. And then one can attain all auspiciousness by such surrender. So everyone has to surrender. But in the course of surrendering, there is always a lot of obstacles that one has to cross over, the different levels of rebellion. For example, there are some people who don't want to surrender and they are being roasted by Maya's dictation. But there are some people who may agree to surrender. Even after becoming devotees, we may bow down to devotees, but there is no internal submission. Internal submission is more deeper than external submission. So internal submission means one is willing, one is agreeing, one is voluntarily putting oneself at the feet of the spiritual master to be molded and corrected and purified and brought to the ideal platform of complete surrender. So there is certainly inhibition in the hearts, and those are the inhibitions which put a stumbling block. One time, in those days, I don't want to tell the name of the devotee, one disciple of Prabhupada, he was undergoing some troubled times. And that was known to another disciple of Prabhupada, Rameshwar Swami. So he came to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, so-and-so is in trouble. He is having many questions which he is not very convinced about Krishna conscious philosophy. He feels that, you know, the way Krishna deals with the living entities is improper. So he wanted to, you know, he had many questions to ask you, but he's afraid of asking you. But he told me, so I will share with you, Prabhupada. I will ask you the questions. So he asked some questions to Prabhupada. So in that connection, he was asking questions regarding the free will of the living entity and the control of Krishna. How much free will the living entity has? Is the living entity not completely free? Is he not totally free? That he can do whatever he wants? Prabhupada said, no. The living being has minute independence. So he asked a question, does Krishna know our future? This is one question many people will ask us. Does Krishna know my past, present and future? Past and present is understandable. But does Krishna know my future? Either way you give answer, you are in trouble. If you say, yes, Krishna knows your future, that means Krishna doesn't allow me any independence. He knows my future, he has already laid a road for me. And in this way, he doesn't give me freedom, he has choked my freedom. That's what they would say. And if you say, no, Krishna doesn't know your future, it is up to you. Oh, that means Krishna is not an all-knowing Lord. Although he says, Vedaham Samatitani, Vartamanani Chajana, Bhavishyani Bhutani. So Krishna is not all-knowing. So either way, they can checkmate you with this question. So they asked this, he asked this question to Prabhupada. Does Krishna know our future? And Prabhupada said, yes, Krishna knows your future. Then immediately he asked this question back. If Krishna knows my future, where is my independence? And then Prabhupada said, no, Krishna knows the consequences of your actions. What is going to happen to you? He said, Krishna knows that these are the two options you can take. There is no third one. There are only two options. If you take this option, you will suffer this. If you take that option, you will enjoy this. That Krishna knows. That is how he knows your future. Prabhupada said. Just like, for example, a father has given a child facility. There is a knife and there is a toy. If you enjoy the toy, you are enjoying. If you touch the knife, you will cut yourself. So, father knows the future. What will happen to the child? Either way, good or bad. Prabhupada explained like that. Then, he said, no, but Krishna says he knows the future. Does he not know my future? entirely. That means Krishna doesn't know how I am going to act. And then Prabhupada said, then where is your independence then? So Prabhupada said, you have independence. Krishna allows you to act in the way you want to act. He doesn't interfere. Then he asked a question. That means I am free. I am not under Krishna's control because Krishna doesn't know how I am going to act. He has given me the independence. Although he knows the consequences of my action, he still is not very sure of which path I will take. That means I am free. And Prabhupada said, no, you are not completely free. And Prabhupada said, yes, you are free to act, but you are not free from the consequences. Just like, you know, somebody may say, I am free to smoke. Yes, you are free to smoke, but there is a statutory warning given in the cover. You know, cigarette smoking is injurious to health. That warning is given. Despite the warning, you are free to smoke, but then you are not free from the reactions of smoking. You will be punished for the reactions. So, this was a very great eye-opener for me when I first read this. Because my understanding of Krishna knowing past, present, future is that Krishna knows our future also. Everything about our future. That's what I understood. Krishna knows about me tomorrow, by next year, and after how many lifetimes I'll go back to Godhead. And he has already carved my future. And because I do not know my future, I have to act as if I'm going to go back to Godhead in this lifetime. That was my understanding. But when I read Prabhupada's comment on this point, Prabhupada says, Krishna knows only the consequences of your future. He allows you to act in either way. And there is a dynamic relationship between living being and Krishna, like this. So if he surrenders, he benefits. If he doesn't surrender, he only suffers, like this. Now, naturally, this behoves another question, which Rameshwara Swami asked. Ramaswamy was telling Prabhupada that, you see, Krishna only has given me the senses. And now I am misusing the senses because senses are dragging me. Why did Krishna give me the senses? That I am pulled into trouble. I am forced to surrender to Maya. If Krishna did not put me in such a situation, I would have been a devotee very easily. And Prabhupada said, he wants Krishna to make him into a machine. Prabhupada said, he just wants to become a machine. Because machine has no independence. But living beings have independence. Krishna has given the senses, but he also has given the knowledge to us that he is the Rishikesh. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchyate. That knowledge also is given. So Krishna wants us to utilize that knowledge and surrender to him. And that decision Krishna has left to us. He wants us to make the decision. And he doesn't force the living entity. He allows, just like a father allows the child to make the right choice. So these questions are very important for us also. Because sometimes people, when we are preaching, people come across this question. Even we might have had similar questions. People ask, why Krishna, if he knows that this is bad for me, why does he allow me to do it? Why should he not prevent me from doing that? Does he not know? And Prabhupada gave a very beautiful example. He said, you know, when the fan is on, if a child wants to touch the fan, the father wouldn't allow. But the father's friend may suggest him that you know, switch off the fan, and when it is rotating very slowly, you know, the father may tell the child to put the finger. And then when the finger is hit, the child learns a good lesson. Oh, it is so painful. What if it was running? My finger would be cut off completely. So Krishna wants us to give an experience of what this world is. So Krishna gives sufferings to mold our personality to a platform of purity. Krishna does that. So in this way, Prabhupada explained very deeply about the nature of the Lord's interaction with the living entities, freedom. Lord doesn't give complete freedom, and the Lord doesn't take away the freedom. He gives a dynamic freedom, which is a changing freedom. It is not the same. The freedom of the living entity can be expanded or constricted depending on how the living entity reciprocates with Krishna. Like you see, for example, those living entities who have misused their freedom thoroughly, they are cast into the bodies of animals. And why animals? It's like a person. Sometimes you will see a policeman catching a thief and mercilessly beating him with a belt. And the boy wants to say something. Sir, this, that, he is saying. And he's beating in the mouth only sometimes. No, like you will see him. And you may have sympathy for him. You may tell the police, hey, why are you so cruel? He wants to say something. Why don't you allow him? He will say, you don't know about him. This is the 10th time he is doing. And the same thing he is doing again. Now we don't want to hear any more reason. He will beat like anything, he will say. Huh? You have seen that? Huh? Because now he will not. His free will is no more now. No more freedom to give any explanation. That period is gone now. Huh? Now he has to suffer in the jail for 6 months, 1 year. After which he will be given a chance to speak anything. Similarly, when the living entity is very mischievous and has done a lot of atrocities, then Krishna is casting him into the bodies of animals and birds and insects, where they have no free will. Practically, free will is stunted completely. They cannot express. But to the degree the living being behaves well, then he is elevated to higher bodies where he can express his free will more and more. Like you will see, you know, somebody was complaining about ISKCON, that is, ISKCON devotees are, these people are parasites on society. So Prabhupada spoke in a conversation. Why do they call us parasites? Because we are not working hard like them, they are calling us parasites. And Prabhupada said, if they call us parasites, they have to call a high court judge also a parasite. Because he does very little jobs. He does. And then Prabhupada said, you know, a human being doesn't have to work hard to earn his livelihood. For earning his livelihood. People work hard for different reasons. You see, there is a fulfillment of heart and there is accomplishment. What we need the most? Fulfillment and satisfaction of the heart. But accomplishment is generally achieved to show the people of the world. Vedas are very clear when they say there is Nishreyas and there is Abhyuday. Nishreyas is satisfaction. Abhyuday is achievement. Vedas never put achievement or accomplishment beyond Nishreyas. They say first you should have fulfillment of heart and then you can have achievements. Achievements are secondary if they don't satisfy your heart. Which means the satisfaction of the heart comes from various things like rise in the morning, worshipping God, taking care of one's family members, wife, children, family, duties to them, and duties to Guru, just like we say, Deva, Dvija, Guru, Pragyam, Pujanam, Shaucham, Arjavam. You know, there are austerities of the body, of the mind, of the speech. One should follow all these things. And then one can go for accomplishing more after, you know, laying a foundation of one's life. Otherwise, when you ask this question in any assembly of people, especially newcomers, out of the two, which one you would want? Fulfillment or accomplishment? Half, more than half of them will say accomplishment or achievement. Because they want to show the world. And some of them want fulfillment, they say. But if you carefully observe, you will see those who are only focused on achievement or accomplishing great things in life, they will generally be egomaniacs. They will be motivated by greed, envy and anger, always. Although they are thinking we are achieving results, they can't do good for themselves also. And they can't do any good for others. Imagine a bloodthirsty corporate who is trying to climb up the ladder of success by stamping on the heads of other people. He is spiritually bankrupt, but materially motivated and inspired to go higher and higher in material life. So he may even do sweet talking on the face and bad mouthing on the back. And he may play a duplicitous role in order to achieve his position or post. And he may successfully do that. But what is that success? That success doesn't give him satisfaction because he's always fearful about his enemies. And doesn't give others satisfaction because they have seen his mentality. So such kind of accomplishment doesn't give any lasting satisfaction to the individual or to the world. That is why the Vedas talk of a combination of these two, Nishreyas and Abhyuday, simultaneously both. So, when the Lord sees that the living entity is focused on material goals only, then the Lord will direct the living entity again back to the spiritual goal by frustrating his attempts. Just like that, sparrow which was trying to, make that. When Prabhupada was living in Vrindavan, outside his veranda, when he was taking massage, there were some sparrows which were trying to make a nest, and Prabhupada was watching it. And when Prabhupada's disciple was massaging, also was watching it. And then he took away those straws and everything. Again they came. Again they started making. Again he took it out. They repeatedly came again and again. Then he took a paper and he made a ball out of it and he inserted it into the hole. So the sparrow came again, was trying to pull it out, you know. But then the sparrow couldn't do it. Then it went and brought its mate. Then two of them, either side, you know, they were very cooperatively trying to pull the paper out. At last they succeeded. Then again they started making the nest. Of course, after some time, the proper disciple didn't want the sparrows to make nest, so he took a cardboard and made a very rigid closure. And then when the birds tried for more than half an hour, they couldn't do it. They accepted defeat and they went away from there. In the same manner, we find when we attempt for happiness in this world, our attempts for happiness are always thwarted by various agents in the material world. We will see that, which come in the form of various sufferings. And why it is done, although the living entity is rebelling against the Lord, he is trying to make adjustments, he is trying to fight against the material nature, still we always find that we are defeated in our purpose, because it is Lord's arrangement to make us realize that this is a foreign place for the living being. It's not a natural place. So, Lord teaches valuable lessons for us through the material nature and through other living entities. Like that verse says, Gunadikan mudam lipset anukrosham gunadamad. The last line of the verse says, Maitrim samana danvichen na tapai rabibuyate. It says, the word tapa means suffering. Na tapai rabibuyate. One can become free from all sufferings even while being in this world from the adibhautika klesh, especially in dealings with people, interpersonal dealings. When one knows the right conduct in dealing with seniors and equals and juniors, then one can be freed from the tapa in the world. What does this mean? The material nature forces us to align ourselves to the Lord's plan. We have to become harmonious. Lord is the hub. We are like spokes around the hub. We have to align ourselves around his plan. To the degree we refuse, to that degree we have to be battered by the waves of material nature and shaped and molded and brought to track, so that we can align ourselves to the ultimate plan of the Lord. That is why Lord gives suffering to the living beings. Now, coming specifically to the demons, against whom the Lord appears to be partial or inimical. Just like you find the Lord takes the form of Mohini Murthy to distribute all the Amrit to the demigods and nothing to the demons. We find many instances like that. The Lord apparently favoring the demigods, especially demigod like Indra, for example. Actually, whenever anybody reads the scriptures, when they hear about the atrocious activities of Indra, many people become angry. How can Indra do such a thing with Gautama Rishi's wife? Or how he can do such a thing with the Vajabasis of Vrindavan? How can he steal the horse from Putu Maharaj's sacrifice? They feel Indra must be punished and is atrocious. That's what people think. But we just see the opposite. We find that the Lord always allows Indra to go on. And you don't find the Lord thoroughly punishing Indra, you know, with the mace and the club. You don't find the Lord beating Indra and killing him, just as he kills the demons. We don't find that. And the simple reason is, Vishnu Bhakta Smrito Daiva Asurastat Viparayaha. The definition of a demon is always against the divine plan of the Lord. The divine plan of Krishna is that all living beings in this world should follow the Brahminical culture and be promoted to the, gradually elevate themselves to higher levels more and more, and then ultimately be promoted to spiritual world. Indra is not against that plan. Indra is favorable to the Lord's plan. Although Indra is a semi-devotee who may have many material desires, Lord appreciates a semi-devotee with many material desires much more than a demon who is apparently cool-headed. Sometimes people ask that certain karmis are so cool-headed, they are so fair in dealings, they are so righteous, they are better than our Hare Krishna devotees, See our Hare Krishna devotees, they pose to be religious, na muhme naam bagal mein churi, muhme naam. And some people quote these things and say, I have seen devotees are so atrocious, but you see, even the so-called karmi people, they are much better than devotees. This is a seed of criticism. It's very dangerous. We have to nip it in the bud. If we have such a mentality, it's very dangerous. Because later on, it may take in the form of a flagrant fire of Vaishnava Parada. Because you will always find the Lord never critical to his devotees. You can see that Saubarimuni became critical to Garuda and he was punished later. You see that. Truvasamuni became critical to Ambarish Maharaj for a small mistake and he became defeated in his purpose. You find that. So although a devotee may commit mistakes, a devotee's heart may be having material desires, still a devotee is in the right track, right path. A devotee is improving and growing. That is why the Lord always is seen to be favoring the demigods and punishing the demons. The demons deserve to be punished even if they control their senses and control their mind, because their purpose of controlling the mind and senses is ultimately to take charge of the whole universe and control everyone and everything, including the Lord himself. That is the desire of the demons. Once I was hearing in Radha Gopinath Prabhu's lecture in the early days here, he was telling that the bed bugs, you know, the bed bug, they become like a flat paper, you know. In which season? In summer season, is it? Winter season, I think. In winter season, they become like a, you know, thin paper. They have no blood in their body. They appear as if they are almost dead. They can't even move also. And then they live in the recesses in the bed, you know. And then when summer season comes, they all come out and drink your blood and they grow very fat and stout. In the same way, he said, Hiranyakashipu was performing such penances like a bed bug. So thin he became. So emaciated. Only the bones were there in his body. So emaciated. Now anybody, people who are not advanced in the path of devotional service, they may tend to glorify those who are performing severe austerities. They will say, you know, if our Ekadashi is doing this, you know, he is through Chaturmas, he eats only this much and all that. They appreciate these things because they don't know what is the purpose behind that austerity. That's very important. In devotional service, intent is very important. Intent with which activities are performed, that's very important. So why did Hiranyakashipu do all that tapasya? So that when Brahma comes, he can become immortal and then he can take over the whole universe. That was his plan. But a devotee like Indra, although sometimes temporarily attached to a post or a position, name and fame, just like Indra stole the horse. But when it comes, quite often you find Indra again surrendering to the Lord many times and offering prayers. Even we can see in our life, many times we commit mistakes and we seek forgiveness as if we have become a pure devotee. You know, we are never going to commit it again. And again we commit the same mistake. And then again we wonder, why does the mistake repeat? And then again we seek forgiveness. So, in our life we can see that we are also like mini Indras. Many times we commit mistakes, small mistakes. And Lord is putting Indra in such a role so that we can teach the living beings what not to do and how to save oneself from such wrong deeds. So, Lord is telling Prithu Maharaj that, you know, you give way to Indra. Let him steal the horse and go, so you don't perform the yajna. Because the Lord considers Prithu to be a more mature devotee than Indra. So sometimes you will find the admonishment often given to a more mature person. Just like you find Lord Vishnu wanted Chitaketu to become Vritrasura. He became Vritrasura and was killed at the hands of Indra, and then he goes back home back to Godhead. So his destination is far greater than Indra also. Indra is going to just be stuck up in the post of heavenly king. But Vritrasura is going to spiritual abode. But still, apparently, we find often the Lord admonishing one who is in a superior position. But that is actually then, because ultimately the Lord is favoring Indra, because Indra and all the demigods and Brahma and the other devatas also, they all favor the spiritual culture, or we can say religious culture to begin with, which will eventually lead people to the spiritual culture. That's why the Lord sometimes appears to be inimical to demons. But for devotees, it's very important to know that Krishna has no enemies. For that, very first thing we should know is that Krishna cannot be harmed by anyone. Krishna's body is asnaviram, shuddham, apapavidham. Krishna's body is completely pure. It is spiritual. There are no veins, there is no blood, there are no bones. He doesn't have to protect his body from anyone's attack. First thing we have to know that. Because If Krishna cannot be killed, then how can anyone harm him? No one can harm him. See, we generally consider someone to be our friend or enemy. Why? Because we want to protect our body from our enemies. But Krishna doesn't have to protect himself from anyone. Nobody can attack him. So, sometimes even Lord's devotee may have such a body. I heard in Mahabharata in one section that even when Narada Muni was attacked by a demon, he was cut across by a sword across his body, but his body never got cut. The sword went across his body, but he never got cut. If a Lord's devotee can be endowed with that power, what to speak of Lord himself? Lord can never be killed. Many demons have tried killing the Lord in various ways. They made plans. Jarasandha set fire to the whole Pravarshana hill, thinking that Krishna Balaram will be burnt to ashes. But Krishna Balaram jumped off from there 88 miles, from the top of the mountain down. So many demons have tried killing the Lord many times. So Lord cannot be attacked, Lord cannot be killed. And then, secondly, because Lord cannot be harmed by anyone or favored by anyone, Lord has no friend or no enemy. Lord considers everyone like his own children. Everyone is Lord's child, including the demons. And when the demon agrees to surrender, then the Lord immediately forgives him. Just like I heard Lord Rama said, even if Ravana comes now here and surrenders to me, I am ready to accept him as my devotee, and I will not kill him. So Lord is not bent upon killing the demons. That is not his purpose. Lord is bent upon rectifying the demoniac mentality of the demons. And often we find the demons encroach on Brahminical culture and thwart the plan of the Lord in helping the living entities to become pious and religious and spiritual. When they thwart the plans, then only the Lord takes action on the demons. Till then he doesn't take action. You will see that. Like, you know, when all the demigods went to Lord Vishnu and prayed that Hiranyakashipu is doing all these atrocities, the Lord was waiting. And the Lord said, when he would insult his own great devotee son Prahlad, at that time he will be destroyed. So Lord actually gives a long rope to the demoniac living beings also. He gives them sufficient time for them to rectify till he punishes them. Just like Lord Krishna gives Shishupal 99 names, ill names to call Krishna. He tolerated all of it. Although the Lord's devotees were so angry, like Bhima, Arjuna, they were all, their lips were quivering, their body was shaking. They wanted to kill Shishupal immediately on the spot. But the Lord very patiently waited. So we have to study these pastimes of the Lord to understand his very benevolent nature. Prabhupada cites the example of Putana. How Putana was a very venomous, vicious Rakshasi. She came to breastfeed poison to Krishna. But Krishna forgave her and gave her the position of a Dhatri. So Uddhava says in Bhagavatam, how can one be more merciful than Krishna? So the merciful disposition of the Lord should be studied and understood and contemplated. And one should become free from this doubt that Lord has some kind of revengeful attitude towards the demons. One should become free from that. In fact, a Madhyamadhikari is not allowed to preach to a Dveshi or an inimical person. Why? Because if we preach to the inimical people, then we also will become, our mind will become wound up by hatred and envy, which is very dangerous for a progressive devotee. Because if you see someone envious, then we will also become envious in order to counterattack their statements. So in order for us to be freed from that, a Madhyamadhikari is advised that you keep a distance and pray from a distance. Because when you pray, then you will cause welfare for that person. And when you pray, then you are also free from harm. And you can see everyone as a potentially a divine person. And you can see like that. But a Uttamadhikari can preach to an envious person. Or a person who is very, very fallen. Uttamadhikari can preach also. Sometimes Lord or his devotee may even scold a demon. Like you find, for example, Lord may take a violent position. For example, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, evoked the presence of Sushruta Chakra to kill Jagai and Madai. Because they had insulted his devotee. Lord took such a violent form. Similarly, sometimes pure devotee of the Lord in the Uttamadhikari stage may respond with such great anger or emotions towards dveshis and other people. But as far as Madhyamadhikari is concerned, he should keep aloof from such people, it is said. That is why it is said here, the Paramatma role is such that the Lord is neither a friend nor an enemy. But the Bhagavan role is such that the Lord is near and dear to all of them. Lord is Bhagavan is ultimately, the ultimate platform, Lord is not neutral. Lord is very near and dear to all living beings. But as super soul, Lord keeps himself in a position of detachment. It's called as simultaneously, a simultaneous role of detachment and attachment, Lord plays, which is explained in the Bhagavad Gita 9.4 and 5, where it is explained, the simultaneous connectedness and non-connectedness of matter and living being to Lord Krishna. The Lord has given the freedom to living beings. You wander inside the world, everywhere. You have that freedom. So you can have independently enacted activities in the material world and I will not become affected by it. I am aloof from it. I have given you the material world. So you try to enjoy, but still I am not attached to it. So Lord gives that freedom to living being. And if the living being wants to surrender, he allows, then he reciprocates with them. So that kind of role the super soul plays and allows the living being to gradually evolve over a period of time. Learn from your own experience in the material world. Wander everywhere. Learn yourself. And then come. And he says here, the devotees also have same nature. In the subsequent verses we will find that the devotees also perform actions which are not affected by attachment or fear or hatred or envy and such things. Because devotees are also in quality, same as the Lord. They behave exactly like that. They're not affected by anything. Like you will find when you meet advanced devotees, you find you take a problem, like if you are facing a problem with some demoniac living being, you take it to great devotees, they never become affected by hatred or envy. You'll always find that they're always aloof from it because they see that here is a mischievous living entity, a living entity who is covered by mischievous attitude. And how to see that the Krishna service goes on without harming that living entity as far as possible. They always say like that. Yudhishthira Maharaj also was like that with Duryodhana. We don't want to get hurt by Duryodhana. At the same time, we don't want to destroy Duryodhana. This was his mentality. Because the sajjan or a devotee of the Lord always wishes well for every other living being. While a durjan always thinks about the vipatti or suffering for other living beings. So Lord and the devotee, they have a similar nature. So Lord Shiva is trying to explain all these things to Parvati. And Prabhupada says in one purport, Parvati and Brahma, you know, they are all very great living entities in the universe, but they are always born in ignorance, in darkness. That is why even Parvati is sitting next to Shiva and asking questions and Shiva is answering and the katha is going on for a long time. Yeah? And Prabhupada says that. So the enlightenment is very important. So the Bhagavatam has risen in the age of Kali Yuga like a sun. To enlighten the living entities about the topmost platform of a pure devotee and the pure devotee's relationship with the Lord. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki. Thank you very much.